You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The next time you're at the doctor's office and you notice hand washing, sterile gloves, think of President James Garfield and count your blessings that it's 2016 and not 1881. University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor Dr. Howard Markel is back with us for another lesson in medical history. So it was on this day in 1881, President James Garfield died, as you describe it, Howard, an agonizing march towards oblivion that began on July 2nd. What happened July 2nd?
Well, he was in a great mood that morning. He was horsing around with his two adolescent boys. He was whistling some Gilbert and Sullivan tunes, and they were about to go on vacation to the New Jersey seashore, Long Branch, New Jersey. When he began walking through the Baltimore and Potomac Railway Station to catch his train, a man named Charles Guiteau, who was a failed lawyer and a failed preacher, took out a gun and shot two bullets. The first one grazed the president's arm, but the second went through the back and lodged somewhere in his abdomen.
Oh, boy. So much damage that could be done. And yes. As you describe this, it somewhat brings to mind what happened to President Ronald Reagan in May of 1981 on the street, and then John Hinckley shoots him, although I know President Reagan was shot in the chest. Mm-hmm. Unlike President Reagan, President Garfield's medical team did not have any concept of germs and cleanliness.
No,
talk about the medical response.
Medicine was not nearly as advanced as it is today. I always say there's never a better time to get sick than today, except for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But several doctors rushed to the scene, including a man named D.W. Bliss. His first name was Doctor, and he was named after the family physician, Dr. Willard. So he was Dr. Willard Bliss.
So now, Dr. Willard Bliss.
He was an expert in ballistics, which is what they called gunshot wounds. And that's because the bullets were actually shaped like balls back then. Mm-hmm. And he applied the standard technique, which was to stick your fingers into the wound and try to fish the bullet out. He did this several times, and then they brought the president back to the White House, and there his troubles began because the team of doctors led by Bliss could not find that bullet, and they were very worried about that. There was a whole slew of theories what a bullet would do if it was lodged into your body. And so they continued to fish around, to put their dirty hands and fingers into the wound, and even opened it up to a 20-inch gash, which became super infected and probably led to the president developing sepsis and then dying on this day in 1881.
So he had, I think the understatement we've ever said on this show, an agonizing 2.5 months.
It was not pretty. No one would volunteer for that. And while his doctors didn't kill him per se, they certainly didn't help things.
Well, it brings to mind the high death rate on Civil War battlefields just a few years before, when you think that that's what was happening to men who were wounded on the battlefields in the Civil War.
Yes, and more people died in Civil War of infectious diseases, particularly gastrointestinal or diarrheal diseases, than from bullets. And that was true, by the way, for all wars up until World War II. Now, something happened during World War II and right after. Penicillin.
Penicillin.
Yeah.
And to us in 2016, you know, Howard, we think of doctors putting unwashed fingers into a wound and digging around in there. But there really was resistance to the germ theorists at first. We've talked about that.
So germ theory really begins in the 1860s when Louis Pasteur and Robert Koch are designing their wonderful experiments, and it's world news. But not every doctor accepted germ theory. And even as late as the 1890s, there were many doctors teaching medicine at major medical schools who denied it. They were called anti-contagionists. My favorite was a man named Alfred Loomis at the Bellevue Medical School, who said to his students, you know, people say there are germs in the air, but I can't see them. And of course, his medical students laughed, as medical students are wont to do. But that it was not a light switch that instantly everybody accepted it. The anti-contagionist force was quite strong. So the notion that I, as a surgeon or as a physician, would harm my patient merely by treating him was laughable to many of these doctors.
Well, it has to make you wonder if people a century or so down the road might look with equal horror at medical practices that we think are just dandy in 2016.
I assure you they will. And that's the virtue of studying history rather than the present, is that you have that upper hand.
University of Michigan medical historian, Dr. Howard Markell, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.